Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you even more information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, it's going to be an alphabet soup of reruns this morning on the award-winning For the People, and it starts out with RWJF, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which just recognized Bridgeport as one of only 8 communities in the entire nation to receive this year's Culture of Health Award. So we'll talk about why and what that means, not only for the Park City, but all of Connecticut. Then it's on to a conversation with AARP, an invitation to you to reimagine your life at one of the upcoming Life Reimagined checkup events coming around in the state in the coming weeks. And then we'll wrap up with the WBDC, the Women's Business Development Council, and its founder and CEO, who is announcing a first-of-its-kind business microloan program run by women for women. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this news. The newly designed KidsMentalHealthInfo.com website connects parents and professionals working with young children in Connecticut to information, training, and resources on children's mental health. The mobile-friendly site features new training sections for professionals and recently translated Spanish-language content for parents on the critical but often overlooked issue of infant and early childhood mental health. Learn more at KidsMentalHealthInfo.com. And don't forget, winter's on the way, but there's always something wild going on at Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo. Get in the holiday spirit and join Frosty and friends for breakfast at the zoo this holiday season. Event dates are being scheduled between December 5th and 20th from 9 to 11 a.m., but reservations are required. Cost is $10 per person for zoo members and $15 per person for non-members. Price includes zoo admission, photo ops with the characters, and breakfast. Call 203-394-6574, or to learn about the many other seasonal activities at Connecticut's only zoo, visit BeardsleyZoo.org. Well, as we said in the introduction this morning, we've got a very, very special honor coming not only to Connecticut here, but to the city of Bridgeport. Bridgeport is one of 8 winners of the 2015 Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Culture of Health Prize, awarded by the foundation and celebrating the strides communities have made to ensure good health flourishes for all. We talked to a lot of folks in the Bridgeport area and Bridgeport region about health initiatives. A lot of very good and interesting things are being generated out of Bridgeport that not only are taking better care of the health of the people there in the Park City, but also are generating health initiatives that are reaching out into other communities throughout the region and, in fact, throughout the state. We're so pleased to welcome this morning Don Schwartz. He's director of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And David Kouris is on the line with us. He's the director of the Office of Policy and Economic Development for the city of Bridgeport. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
So, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we'll start with Don. Just give us a quick little bit of background there on the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and why the foundation is engaged in looking for communities that are taking better care of the public health.
Thanks. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is the nation's largest private philanthropy focused entirely on health, and we are working with communities across the country to build a culture of health, a enduring belief by all Americans that health is a fundamental value to all of our lives. We have been looking now for the last 3 years for communities that exemplify that, communities where there is a partnership and a focus placed on health for all. This year, 340 communities applied to be recognized as the nation's culture of health communities, and 8 communities were chosen. Bridgeport was one of those 8. And we were both impressed and delighted with what we've found and heard about Bridgeport We think that the work going on in Bridgeport exemplifies what we mean when we say building a culture of health in this country.
So Don, was there sort of a uniform standard by which all of the eight qualifying communities were able to rise to and above? Were there some basic boilerplate things that you were looking for across all the applicants that then kind of, centered around these eight cities and towns?
We have six criteria for the prize. We look for communities that define health in the broadest possible terms. We look for communities where sustainable change is being made, in particular policy-oriented long-term change. We look for communities where equity is a driving force and the equal opportunity for all to be healthy is itself prized within the community. We look for communities where collective impact is happening among leaders, partners, and community members. We look for places that are using their available resources as effectively as possible and looking for new resources. And finally, we look for places that are measuring and sharing the results of the work that they're doing. And Bridgeport exemplifies all of those.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about some of the specific similarities or perhaps even one resonating factor that was uniform amongst all the communities, drilling into those various points of criteria? What was it that really made these eight kind of sing in harmony?
I think probably a collective focus on equity. Believing that everyone needs to benefit from the good work that's going on across the community and that the whole community isn't done with that work until everyone has an opportunity to be healthy.
And I'm gathering is this just the second round ever of this initiative? There's with the eight that have been recently awarded, including Bridgeport, there's only 20 of these culture of health communities right now being recognized by the foundation?
So this is the third round. Each year we have a round of applications and awards. Each of the first 2 years there were six awardees, and this year there are eight for a total of 20.
Great. Well, let me give you a break, Don, and switch over to David. David, thanks for joining us once again. So can you talk a little bit about how Bridgeport got wind of the opportunity to apply and why you thought it, why you or the city thought it was important to go after this, at the application stage?
Sure. Our very capable public health director, Kristen Dubé-Horton, had first raised this prospect to multiple departments, and it was a collaboration amongst public facilities, economic development, central grants, health and social services that made us realize that the work that we were doing collaboratively, as well as with our partner agencies and nonprofits throughout the city, was addressing health in the holistic way that Robert Wood Johnson Foundation was looking for, which made us think we were well suited for the prize.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at the cost of public health initiatives, even something as simple as leafleting outreach or some direct mail pieces to provide some point of health education, flu clinics, health services that might be available, and you look at the prize of the $25,000, which is coming to Bridgeport as a result of being one of these eight qualifying cities this year. That's not a huge amount of money, but the honor certainly appears to be somewhat priceless in terms of not only the very few communities that have been recognized so far in the three rounds, but also when you look at it against, you put Bridgeport in the great company of the Bronx, New York, and Kansas City, Missouri, and a couple of the other cities that won, including, I believe, an Indian nation this year in Spartanburg County, South Carolina. I mean, you're in pretty incredible company there.
Absolutely. You know, the real value of this prize is the network and the connections that we will foster with our colleagues around the country who are working on some of the same issues, and also the broader resources of the foundation and their partners throughout the country. Certainly the financial assistance helps and we'll use it to make sure that some of the programs that we've initiated over the last few years becomes institutionalized. And we'll use it to leverage additional resources from throughout the community. But of far greater value is the technical support and frankly the emotional support, knowing that we're not in this alone, but we have a network of folks from around the country and from the foundation that can be a shoulder to lean on when we need support and we need advice and we need best practices.
Well, certainly the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's Culture of Health Award to Bridgeport, as we said, is a great honor. But Bridgeport didn't get this by just, flipping a switch, as you explained. This has been the point at which Bridgeport is at right now in terms of how it is supporting and communicating health-related issues and public health services is a long time coming. And so this is kind of a snapshot in time that you were recognized. And certainly now, as you explained, the effort is going to continue. What do you see as being next on the horizon as a major health initiative that the city wants to embrace or tackle?
Great question. You know, I think what was so phenomenal about this prize is that it recognizes that so much of what we do as a city has a health component, even though it may not be what is typically thought of as a health activity. And similarly, what's been so great about Mayor Fitch's administration is that health is one of the indicators that we use to judge our work, whether it's in zoning or brownfield reclamation or in employment generation. And so, you know, in terms of what's next, I think the crucial next step is continuing to connect the dots, whether it's linking our urban agriculture program to our schools, to an educational component. It's going to be taking the next step in leveraging the activities that are taking place to make sure that they're compounding one another for the greatest possible impact. So there's not one single program that I see, you know, being launched in the near term, but rather the stitching together of all the concurrent activities to make sure we have, you know, a whole that's greater than just the sum of its parts.
Excellent. Folks, if you're just tuning in to the beginning of the program this morning, we are sharing in an honor bestowed on Bridgeport and seven other communities across the nation by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. It's called the Culture of Health Prize, which is celebrating strides in communities that communities have made toward a good health for their entire population. On the line with us is Don Schwartz. He's director of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, as well as David Kouris here in Bridgeport. He's director of the Office of Policy and Economic Development for the city. We'll give David a break and go back to Don for just a few minutes. So, Don, as we're hearing from you and David, it's easy to gather that while the prize recognizes initiatives in health, and as you sort of explained earlier in the interview, it takes a lot of things into consideration. What do you find when you're talking about this now three-year-long program of the Culture of Health Awards? What are things that you find people are most surprised to hear about as being perhaps a considering criteria to be celebrated among some of the most healthy communities in the nation? We're hearing from David about things that aren't necessarily directly related to something you'd think is a health initiative, like employment or education, although from 10,000 feet it all kind of ties together in the big picture. What are some of the other things that you find folks are surprised to learn are sometimes driving criteria that the foundation considers to honor?
I appreciate your question. I think that the broad nature of the things that go into health is usually the biggest surprise. Most people, when they hear health, they think about health care. We know that health care only contributes a small amount to our health, but there are many other things, including the food we eat and the opportunities that we have for good employment and the likelihood that our children are well-educated. All of those are substantial contributors to each of our individual and to our collective health as a nation. That's usually a moment when people have surprise and say, wow, that's what you're about. That's what you're trying to recognize. And we say yes. The other surprise is that many of the prize-winning communities are not places that people think of necessarily as healthy. So the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation supports, in collaboration with the University of Wisconsin, a rating system called County Health Rankings and Roadmaps that rates the health of people, of counties, in each state in the country. Many of the places that are recognized in the Culture of Health Prize are not the healthiest places in their states, but we believe they are coming together as places on a path to being healthy, and they are taking up the challenge of the health status of people in their communities and using that to drive change for the better and for the future.
As we indicated earlier, Bridgeport stands alongside seven other winning communities this year, including Bronx, New York, Everett, Massachusetts, Kansas City, Missouri, and Lawrence, Massachusetts. But there's also a few other interesting contenders who rose to the top. Could we talk a little bit, to the extent that you can tell us, about what resounded amongst the selection committee with Spartanburg County, South Carolina? Why did the focus broaden so wide for the county? Was it because the county was simply an applicant?
Yes. This is an application-driven process. The county applied, and it's an eligible applicant for us. So anyone that has an organized governmental unit, like a county or a city, can apply for the prize. And Spartanburg, like Bridgeport, has demonstrated that it meets the criteria that we talked about earlier to be recognized as a prize winner. Remarkable things are happening there, just as remarkable things are happening in Bridgeport and in each of the other communities that applied and have now received the prize.
And I guess folks like me who kind of follow public health trends and initiatives know that for a long, long time, decades, there has been both an outcry and a great concern on the part of public health on a lot of Native American tribal nations across the country. Certainly with the advent of, the casino-fying of a lot of these nations, that has injected a lot of revenue that has then kind of ripple effect into the populations, including impacting positive public health. But it's interesting that Massachusetts had two separate and somewhat neighboring cities that were selected for this year's Culture of Health Award, but that Wisconsin calls two separate Native American nations winners of this award. Can you talk a little bit about the two Native American winners of the Culture of Health Prize?
Absolutely. So these are two separate tribal nations that are located within the state of Wisconsin. They applied independently and are each on a pathway to improving health. What is remarkable is the focus in each one, both on young people and on those who are older, and partnerships and respect for both elders and for children, and the work that's going on across the whole tribal nation, each of those tribal nations, to secure healthy futures for their children and to honor the lives and the health of elders within their communities.
Fantastic. Before we go, let's go back to David Kouras. He's with us right here in Bridgeport. He's director of the Office of Policy and Economic Development. So, David, looking forward, we talked about where Bridgeport might be going, not only with applying this $25,000 prize from the foundation, but also in terms of initiatives. Is there anything else that you'd like to say to the folks who are listening across the state of Connecticut who may have not not visited Bridgeport or only driven through it over the past 15 or 20 years, because it's kind of a magical time over the past few years, and looks to be in the future with the development of Steel Point and Pleasure Beach reopening, and so many small things that are happening in a big way throughout Bridgeport's many neighborhoods and in the downtown.
Well, yeah, thank you, John. I appreciate that recognition. I mean, we really do feel like the city has turned a corner towards its renaissance, and it's palpable on the ground, as you say, visible projects like Steel Point or Pleasure Beach or revitalization of downtown. You know, what I would say in relationship to this prize is the recognition that, you know, it's really about the health of the community as much as it is about the health of the individual. And the cumulative impact of reclaiming brownfields, of implementing urban gardens, of bringing green jobs and green industry within walking distance of our neighborhoods, of rezoning and catalyzing economic development that's more transit-oriented, that's more walkable, by reopening the waterfront. You know, Bridgeport has the most coastline of any municipality in Connecticut. Reopening that and providing access to our communities that have been cut off from that amenity for so long, the cumulative impact of all those activities is to create a healthy community that within which individuals can be more healthy, and that's what we think the Culture of Health Prize is all about, recognizing that holistic approach that is, you know, one of many steps that are all working together to reposition Bridgeport for future prosperity.
Excellent. Thank you very much. For more than 40 years, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has worked to improve the health and health care for all Americans, and striving to build a national culture of health that will enable all Americans to live longer, healthier lives now and for generations to come. Bridgeport was recently selected as Connecticut's only recipient, and one of only 8 across the nation from among 340 prize applicants for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's 2015 Culture of Health Award. We want to thank our guest this morning. Don Schwartz has been on the line with us. He's director of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. A lot of good information from your chat, Don. Learned a lot. Thank you so much. And David Kouris, director of the Office of Policy and Economic Development for the City of Bridgeport, a city certainly going places here in Connecticut, and with a lot more to come, now boasting this unique honor, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's Culture of Health Prize winner for 2015. Gentlemen, thank you for being on the program. One of the great resources to our program are the many folks tied to AARP here in Connecticut. And we were so pleased to be contacted by AARP recently about a relatively new program, or at least new to me, from the college years through the golden years. Americans are moving through life differently than ever before, living longer, not just riding off into the sunset. And we're enjoying new transitional life phases. One filled with possibilities, new beginnings, and enter life reimagined. This idea from AARP is a new way of thinking about what's next in your life. It's developed by a team of leading professionals and backed up by years of research. We are so pleased to tell you how you can go and have your own life reimagined checkup. We'll also be focusing in on a particularly special life reimagined checkup down in Norwalk on November 30th. That's going to feature a very unique keynote speaker. And to do all of that, we are welcoming life reimagined guide Joyce Ramsey. Joyce, thanks for joining us on the phone this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start talking about you. What's your background, and how did you discover and then decide to become a life reimagined guide?
Well, for the past 15 years, I'd been working for an organization as their diversity and inclusion outreach coordinator. And one day, as I was in the middle of my work, I was told that this position was going to be eliminated. So certainly that came as a shock because I thought we were really doing great work as we were, but the company was re-engineering and felt that the effort would be best and resources would be best used elsewhere. So I was at a crossroads. What's next? And I stumbled. I had been a volunteer for Life Reimagined, working on their Decide, Create, Share program because I thought that that was phenomenal, and stumbled onto Life Reimagined. And I started reading about the program and then went through the training in the program and said, yeah, this is it. This was my opportunity to hit pause and say, my what's next is going to take me to talking to other people about what their next steps in their life are. And I've been doing conducting Life Reimagined sessions throughout the state of Connecticut and in New Hampshire, and it's such an incredibly empowering program, and I'm delighted to be a part of it.
Well, beyond the kind of conversational introduction, let's drill into exactly what it's about and who it's for. And how old or young do you have to be to consider reimagining your life, perhaps under your guidance or one of the other Life Reimagined guides that are engaged in some of these events? And why would people want to do that? What are a few of the deeper components that then breed a better life for people who go through this Life Reimagined process?
Well, I think originally the program was going to be geared towards seniors who were at a crossroads. Either their career life was ending or a relationship was ending. There were some changes within their lifestyle that they needed to just kind of look around and figure out where they were going to go in their life journey. And as we've been conducting this and offering this, I think young people are finding it, you know, effective, and it speaks to them as well. It's a kind of a personalized GPS program that allows you to rediscover what really matters, and it helps by offering a map to plan and to achieve what your next steps are going to be. So as far as relationships or work or your personal well-being, this program speaks to all of that. And you get what you want through interactive goal-oriented programs that are specifically tailored by you and for you.
How does the research and the deep resources of AARP make a Life Reimagined checkup and interaction with Life Reimagined guides like you different than what people may just dismiss as life coaching by another name?
Okay, so I think that the thought leaders, I mean, this is a program, in my experience, that's kind of a ancestral wisdom of the AARP thought leaders. I think at some point in all of our lives, we, you know, want to just make a stop and say, I need some support, I need some direction as to where I'm going to go next. And, yeah, this can be considered a coaching program, but I think it's more than that. I think it's an opportunity where you are supporting your own efforts. You're re-realizing your own dreams. You are tapping into all of those what-ifs that maybe, you know, you were engaged in when you were 18, 20, 30 years old. You have an opportunity now to kind of revisit those thoughts and dreams and take the chance. I mean, one of the questions that we ask when we are starting a Life Reimagined session is, if there was one thing that you could do and you knew you could not fail, what would that something be? And folks generally go back to, you know, when I was 20, I always wanted to do this, or when I was 30, I thought about doing this. And then our follow-up question is, then why not now? And we look at all those things that we have created, you know, the stumbling blocks and the barriers that we have created or have been created that prevent us from getting to that that one thing that we would do if we could knew we could not fail.
Okay. Well, before we go into the break and come back and talk to you about the multiple Life Reimagined checkups that are happening across the state in the next few weeks, as well as this very special event with your keynote speaker that's coming down to the Norwalk Inn on November 30th, let's illustrate a little bit about what you were explaining by shining the spotlight on one or two of the folks that you've met during your checkups and how they have reimagined and then set out on the course to make that imagination reality.
Okay, so there are, do you want to do that now?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've met a woman who wanted to write a book. She'd always thought about writing a children's book. Mm-hmm. And in one of our Life Reimagined sessions, she said, this is what I think I would do. But she was already in the process of writing it, putting it out there, and I believe now she's in having it published. It will be published. That was one situation. I met a gentleman when I did the Life Reimagined in Southbury who said, you know, I've been going to these men's groups, and all we talk about is sports, and we talk about, you know, what's happening in our community that they live in. He said, I think I'm going to take this opportunity to do something else with this group. I think we want to focus on our own health. And instead of turning this into just a gab fest, what we want to do is to support each other on our health journey. Maybe I think we're going to start walking. So folks come away with an idea that they want to do that's going to improve their life in some way, and they actualize it.
Excellent. Well, if you have at some point in your life imagined doing something that you've just never got to, or if you think you're somebody out there who might be able to guide folks to discover something that they imagined that they would like to turn into and will turn into a reality in the future, we're going to come back after the break and talk a little bit about how to become a Life Reimagined guide, just like our guest Joyce Ramsey from AARP. We're going to give you the list of Life Reimagined checkup locations and times and dates that are coming up in the next few weeks here in Connecticut. And we will also tell you about a very special Life Reimagined checkup event in Norwalk with special guest and keynote speaker Kim Saroy-Pita. We'll be back with another few minutes with Joyce Ramsey from AARP and Life Reimagined. Stay with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through LoveCT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to LoveCT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Join Easter Seals Goodwill at Lighthouse Point Park in New Haven for the 21st annual Fantasy of Lights, a spectacular and dazzling holiday tradition. The park is open nightly from 5 to 9 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 5 to 10 on Fridays and Saturdays. Admission to Fantasy of Lights is $10 for passenger cars or family vans, $25 for 15-passenger minibuses, and $50 for full-size buses. This year, enjoy over a mile of brilliantly twinkling lights, graciously sponsored by businesses and organizations in the community. And this year, even more of the displays have gone green with new LED light bulbs in an effort to both save energy and make the displays more vibrant. All proceeds help support Easter Seals Goodwill Industries' mission to enhance employment, educational, social, and recreational opportunities for people with disabilities and other challenges. For details, call Easter Seals Goodwill at 203-777-2000 or visit esginh.org. All right. Thanks for coming back. You must want to reimagine your life. Life Reimagined is an idea from AARP, a new way of thinking about what's next in your life. It's been developed by a team of leading professionals and backed up by years of research. Life Reimagined introduces a powerful step-by-step approach to help you start your journey of exploration, discover your passion and purpose, and put your dreams into action. Where can you do it? Well, there are a number of Life Reimagined checkups that are coming up as soon as November 13th. at 1:30 p.m. at the Bristol Senior Center the next day on November 14th at the Plainville Library. There's also a couple in December. Maybe you'd like to reimagine your life as a New Year's resolution, and you get started with that on December 8th in Woodbury at the Woodbury Senior Center, or way up in Enfield on December 23rd at the Enfield Senior Center. The other event we want to talk about is a very special one coming up on November 30th in the early evening at the Norwalk Inn and Conference Center. Joyce Ramsey is with us. She is a AARP Life Reimagined guide. So Joyce, tell us a little bit about this sort of special checkup event on November 30th.
So November 30th at 5:15 p.m., we are going to be at the Norwalk Inn and Conference Center. We'll be providing a light dinner, and you'll be listening to wonderful and inspirational speaker and blogger Kim Soyce-Peter. The session is, and the event is 90 minutes long, and it's going to offer you an opportunity to look at and rediscover what really matters and map out a plan to achieve it. You're going to be offered just practical tools to help you plan your next move, and you'll hear from other guides like myself who can inspire you to tackle a life transition. It's going to be quite a lot of fun and a lot of information, and a lot of good people are going to be there. So we hope if you're available, you can come on out and join us.
Excellent. And we should let people know that if they'd like to learn a little bit more or get excited about what Kim Soyce-Peter is doing, they could check out her website, which is peaceofpeta.com, PEACEOFPITA.com, Peace of PETA. She will be the keynote at the Life Reimagined checkup event in Norwalk on the evening of November 30th. We'll tell you where to go for that information. So, Joyce, in the last few minutes that we have, I'd like to just quickly review what people should expect if they come out to any of these Life Reimagined checkups that are happening over the next few weeks here in Connecticut. Does it cost any money? Do they need to bring, like, tax forms or a resume, comfortable shoes? What will people expect when they walk in and meet their Life Reimagined guide like you?
Well, first of all, they should know that these are absolutely free. That this is a gift to them from AARP for themselves. That's expect to have an aha moment at some point in time. Expect to meet a lot of other people who are courageous and curious about what's next in their lives, and expect to walk away with some tools that are going to help empower them on their next steps.
Okay. And then for the rest of the folks out there, maybe those who think I've already reimagined my life and the thing I want to do most is help people do the same thing, well, they could become a Life Reimagined guide too. Do you have to have any special personal, professional, or academic background to become a Life Reimagined guide?
Not necessarily. Most of the guides have been volunteers and come from a variety of a different work experience and life experience with AARP. There's going to be other opportunities offered for guides, and I guess if you want to find out more, you'll go to lifereimagined.com, or you can always contact Erica Michalski, who is our AARP contact for the Life Reimagined guides, and she's at, that's Erica Michalski at AARP.org, who provide information, a lot of volunteer information through her contact.
Excellent. Now, I guess I'll leave you with the question: is this a kind of turnkey initiative that's sort of packaged and set, or do you see the Life Reimagined initiative through AARP as something a little bit more organic, something that can grow and get better with input from both participants and guides like yourself moving into the future?
Absolutely. It does grow. It is growing. And as we speak, there are people who are reaching out to me on, I guess, on my laptop saying, we'd like to do one in our community, and we'd like to do one in our community. This program resonates and will resonate, and once I've had someone kind of walk through it, they want to share the experience with others. The thought leaders were very mindful of what they wanted and what they were hoping that people would receive from this, and it's happening.
Excellent. Well, as you're hearing, if you attend one of the following Life Reimagined checkups in Connecticut, you can rediscover what really matters and map out a plan to achieve it. You can gain insight into where you are in life and where you want to go, be equipped with practical tools to help you plan your next move and achieve those goals that you set out, while interacting with others that can inspire you to tackle those transitions and hear and get inspired by those other folks who have already taken similar paths. We invite you to the next series of Life Reimagined checkups beginning on November 13th at the Bristol Senior Center at 1:30 p.m. at the Plainville Library the next day, November 14th at 10 a.m. On December 8th at 2 p.m. at the Woodbury Senior Center, on December 23rd at 1 p.m. at the Enfield Senior Center, and the very special Life Reimagined checkup and event at the Norwalk Inn and Conference Center at 5:15 p.m. on November 30th, featuring a very special keynote speaker, Kim Saroy-Pita. Our guest this morning has been Life Reimagined guide Joyce Ramsey, representing AARP. Joyce, thank you so much for being part of the program. I learned a lot, and look forward to meeting you and hearing more about how the Life Reimagined checkup is growing and becoming even more effective in helping people discover, embrace, and enjoy the rest of their lives. Well, as promised, we are returning with one of the guests on the program this morning, who has been one of my longest and dearest friends on the award-winning For the People, way back in 1997 when she decided to start what at the time was called the Women's Business Development Corporation. Our guest this morning, Fran Pastore, came on the program to talk about it, and we've been welcoming her back year after year ever since. The WBDC is now the Women's Business Development Council, and Fran Pastore is celebrating yet another fantastic event, their big event that happened up in Hartford just a few days ago. She's joining us now out in the field, so don't mind the celebratory music, because we'll soon have the celebratory laugh of Fran Pastore with us. Fran, welcome.
Thank you, John. Thanks for always having me back and being such a good friend in the media. Appreciate it.
Oh, that's okay.
I'll celebrate your success as
well. Oh, it's nice to know. And it's great to hear you've got a carnival atmosphere going on over there. So we'll ask our listeners to just ignore it, because there's some critically important information that we want to talk about. First of all, for folks that aren't familiar, the WBDC empowers women and men to become thriving employers and more effective employees, from starting or growing a business to advancing a career or increasing their income. The WBDC illuminates business success in a tangible and accessible way. This past week, the WBDC held its 14th annual business breakfast down in Stamford, and it came with a fantastic announcement that we're going to be talking about to anyone out there who has faced the barrier of starting a new business because of the inability to access capital investment. But first, Fran, welcome to the program again. Thank you. And let's talk a little bit and do a little bit of a recap on the breakfast. You had a pretty interesting panel who were on board talking about supplier diversity and how supplier diversity drives your bottom line. How did this subject kind of come to the fore as being what women and men involved with WBDC wanted to hear about?
Well, you know, John, one of the things that's happened over the years at WBDC is that we've become very engaged in national advocacy for women business owners. And in that context, we are part of the National Women's Business Council and Women Impacting Public Policy. And as a result of being part of those two groups, we are very much connected to the issues, the barriers, and the challenges that face women entrepreneurs. And the Women Impacting Public Policy Organization and the National Women's Business Council focus on three issues for women entrepreneurs. They've identified three issues as the most important issues for women entrepreneurs. And one of them is accessing capital. The other is accessing new markets. And lastly, it's access to resources. And so these are the things that are being discussed and talked about in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and new policies and are being developed around those topics for women entrepreneurs. And because I sat on the National Women's Business Council for some time, and now I'm a board member on Women Impacting Public Policy, I just felt it's become my obligation and a passion of the organization, not just mine, at WBDC, to bring those topics to Connecticut. Because what's happening in Washington, D.C., what's being discussed and debated, sometimes just doesn't make its way back to the states and to local communities. So those issues of importance and relevance to women entrepreneurs, laws that are being passed that we would never know about, we really believe that that's our obligation to women in our state.
Mm-hmm. So I have to admit, and you guys are great about putting out your solicitations and getting your tickets online way in advance of these. And it was months and months ago when I first learned, probably back in the late spring, when I heard about the 14th annual business breakfast for WBDC. And I'm looking at, their keynote is going to be on supplier diversity. And I guess if you kind of break that down into extremely simplistic terms, you kind of get an idea about what it is. But you brought in the executive director of President Obama's National Women's Business Council. You brought in an individual from Comcast NBC Universal, a senior manager from Laura Taylor, and someone from Pitney Bowes.
Mm-hmm.
Just briefly recap a couple of the high points about supplier diversity that any entrepreneur or business person of any size or scope really needs to know.
So supplier diversity has been, it's a little understood term, but what it basically means is that to do business with diverse groups of people rather than the same people that you've been doing business with forever, right? So I'll give you an example. The federal government has been talking about supplier diversity for a long time because the federal government is the largest purchaser of goods and services on the globe.
Mm-hmm.
And to get a contract with the federal government is a pretty big deal, and it can be the difference between, surviving or thriving as a business owner. For many, many years, for decades, the federal government has been doing business with the same vendors. And what supplier diversity is about, it's about leveling the playing field. So, for many years, and without being, without any gender bias injected here whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
and being very honest, most businesses that did business with the federal government were typically male-dominated businesses owned and operated by exclusively men.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're talking about supplier diversity, we're talking about all components of our society participating in the wealth that can be generated and the business growth and sustainability that can be done by accessing a contract with the federal government. What's happened in the last 20 years is corporations have also adopted supplier diversity as an initiative. And the reason for that is because when you look at who's buying your goods and services, whether it's Xerox or Cadillac, if you look at television, if you see commercials and you look at ads in print, okay, we all know that women make 90% of the purchasing decisions in a household. That might not be the case with regard to financial decisions around financial instruments. I think it's at about 65%.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that over the next 20 years, women will be managing 80% of the wealth in this country and will be making and continue to make 90% of all purchasing decisions. So it's good business for corporations to look at who their consumers are and say, we want to do more business with women-owned businesses.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, there are quotas for doing business with businesses owned and operated by a member of the LGBT community, minority communities. There are all kinds of supplier diversity initiatives. It's not just around women. It's around all of the different segments of the population who have the purchasing decisions in their family. And when you look at, for example, who's buying cars, the number of women buying automobiles is through the roof. If you look at who's buying everyday products, hardware stores, appliances, kitchen cabinets, I mean, we're not just marketing to one particular field of people,
sure,
or one particular demographic. So that's the background on supplier diversity, and it's become a business imperative.
Very interesting. Well, not to overshadow the fabulous panel or the keynote subject, but you did. You came out of the gate at the business breakfast with a fantastic announcement that you were recently approved by the U.S. Department of the Treasury's Community Development Fund Initiative. So in the last few minutes that we have with you, let folks know about this brand new initiative, this micro loan program that's ramping up.
Yes. So it's really exciting. You know, lending to women in Connecticut, loans under $100,000 has decreased by about 70% since 2008. A lot of that can be attributed to the recession, and a lot of that can also be attributed to the fact that loans under $100,000 are very risky, and they're just as expensive for a bank to provide as a $5 million loan.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is most lenders, bank and non-bank lenders, really don't want to be making those loans. So what started happening about 2 years ago when we learned all of this, simultaneously we started receiving phone calls from a variety of different non-bank microlenders from around the country saying, hey, you know, we learned that Fairfield County in Connecticut is, you know, prime for microlending. Would you help us get our company up and running in your neck of the woods? And at first, you know, we're very collaborative, so we really wanted to work with them. But then I thought, well, wait a minute. We've got the clients. We've got the credibility. Why aren't we doing this? And so we started talking about it with a handful of financial institutions and other stakeholders around the state. And like all good things, you know, and like all entrepreneurial endeavors, you cannot have a plan, a business plan, that accounts for every possible change that might happen in your organization. And literally last Thursday, which was the day before our big event, I received a call from United Bank saying that they were going to provide the seed capital for the microloan fund to WBDC. So we're really excited about it. We'll be the first loan program of its kind for women, run by women. And we really are trying to level the playing field for women business owners in Connecticut.
Excellent. So if people are interested in learning about this in the future, they can go to ctwbdc.org. And as things start to gel and the applications become available, they could learn about that program as well as all of the other things that WBDC offers at the website.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And the number to call, the main number, is 203-353-1750. We expect to start providing capital in the first quarter of 2016. We're really excited about it, but we are in the very early stages, and the United Bank funding came as a big surprise. So we're really happy to have it, and we now have to put all of the other pieces in place.
Fantastic. Since 1997, the nonprofit Women's Business Development Council has been believing in revitalization because they experience it every day. They are working with women and men who want to become thriving employers and more effective employees, from starting or growing a business to advancing a career or increasing your income. WBDC can help illuminate business success in a very tangible and accessible way. We heard about just a couple couple of the ways they did it in just the past couple of days with the founder, Fran Pastore, who joined us on a very busy day. And Fran, we thank you for taking the time, and we'll be back to talk to you soon, folks. Once again, it's ctwbdc.org to find out more. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Vayette. I'm John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for another installment of the award-winning For the People. Or listen to this and other For the People podcasts under the podcast tab at our radio station website or on iTunes. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.